Channel 1 over. Beginning of the Debbie's report on her weekend with Candy. This Tuesday night, the 6th of March, 73. Tuesday night, the 6th of March, after 3, after supper. Channel 1 over. And beginning of Debbie's report was Rick. This Tuesday, after supper, the 6th of March, 73. Channel 1 over. Beginning of Debbie's report was Rick. On her weekend with Candy, this Tuesday after supper, the 6th of March, 73.
We'll have a pack of black bean packs.
Did you soak them, Rick, before you planted them, or did you plant them cold?
I soaked two, and the two I didn't. And the one I didn't has come up.
Well, I told him to soak them.
Experiment, you know.
Yeah. You're going to try cutting them in half and all that?
I didn't cut them in half this time. That doesn't seem to profit any. Some of them I split the outside covering. That seems to help you get going.
I can't see what people, what they're making faces at. It's not in my trouble.
Maybe just assume they are.
Well, we've got a crowded docket tonight.
I ain't gonna do away with it.
What kind of sign is that when people got strangled for you?
I don't know. It sounds like it. Now I'm not going to be able to talk.
I had a little thing I stuck that on. I forget where. Well, what I want to know, Faye, now Rick's got here some reporting to do too, but we'll hold him up. I know what he's going to say. He got a nice report on the wilderness. But now, out in the great world, it looks a little different from time to time.
Well, I went to Tallahassee. I tell you, you want to hear some reporting.
Yeah.
You go up there and listen to them talk about their dogs. You think Berman Dodd's got something on pets.
Yeah.
You should hear them report on those dogs. They know every move those puppies make. It's a house completely run by puppies. They have these two four-month-old puppies. Candy said to me when she talked to me on the phone last week, she said, everything you ever heard about people who have dogs as surrogate children, it's true about us. She said, it's so bad, we've even given them a room in the house. We shut the door and leave them in there. You walk in and immediately these two dogs are in your arms. You know, they're puppies. Well, they're different. They're completely different, the two dogs. And Candy and Doug will tell you how they're different. They're named Puck and Oberon. Oberon is about this high at 4 months. He's half Husky and half German Shepherd, and he's just enormous. He weighs about 50 pounds. Puck is half Schnauzer and half Cocker Spaniel, and he's about this big and all curly and black and just sort of all the time. And he gets underneath Oberon and just sort of chews around, you know, and Oberon is terribly aloof. He just won't have anything to do with this little puppy who loves everybody. Puck loves everybody. He just hops indiscriminately into any lap that's available. Anybody that sits down, Puck's in your lap. Oberon, it takes him 24 hours to get used to you. Candy said, I'm so worried about him. She said, I'm so worried about him. He's just so aloof. He's not relating. Well,
I know what she's talking about. I had a cat like that. That cat wouldn't relate either.
She said, we were so excited when we rented the house. Did I tell you about they're renting the house?
You told us some of the gruesome details.
Well, they rented the house because it had a fenced-in backyard for the dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they rented a fenced yard with a house attached. They never even looked in the house when they bought it. Well, so the idea was there was this yard, and the dogs could play together in the yard. Well, that lasted about 4 weeks because Oberon is so big that he has now learned how to climb the fence. So they put them out in the yard. Oberon climbs the fence and is gone all day sniffing around. And Puck stays in the yard and has to dig all by himself, which means that when you see Puck, he's got, you know, mud up to about here and mud all over his face. Which was the only thing that annoyed me about the puppies was that every time I happened to sit down, they seemed to have also muddy feet and be right in my lap.
But wasn't that dangerous for Oberon?
Well, probably so, but they can't keep him in. He's like these cows. He won't stay in. Doug's project every week is to fix the fence again where Oberon's gone out. They have all these things piled up in the backyard, these sawhorses piled up to keep the dog from climbing the fence. But he just goes around the sawhorses and climbs over again. He doesn't jump the fence. He climbs it. He climbs up one side and then climbs down the other side. He doesn't jump. And he climbs over anybody's fence in the neighborhood. He climbs into the neighbor's fence, and he's climbed in and beat up their dogs one day. So, they're living a life regulated by the puppies at the moment.
Well, that hadn't been going on.
Since Christmas.
Yeah, since Christmas.
They gave each other puppies for Christmas.
January, February.
December. Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah.
And they each gave each other the dog they wanted. Oh. See, Candy gave Doug this little spaniel that she likes. Yeah. And Doug gave Candy this big dog that he likes. So that their dogs, supposedly the dogs that they got for Christmas, are reversed. Doug just loves Oberon and thinks Puck's a nuisance.
How about that?
But Candy and I took a jungle ride, and I saw Candy in action. I wondered, you know, I never could put my finger on what it was about Candy.
Do you mind if I just keep these down?
You keep them down.
Huh?
Yes, you keep them down.
I'm just looking at you. I'm looking at you. I'm not hiding.
No, you keep them down. When I was writing about Greece, I used to say Candy's pushy. Well, that's not the right word for it. I'm not sure what the right word for it is, but I saw her in action when we took this jungle ride at Wakulla Springs, and I haven't got the word for it yet, but it's all there. Candy said to me, what we ought to do, Sunday was a nice day, she said, what we ought to do is go to Wakulla Springs and take the jungle ride. It's just beautiful. It's Ed Ball's wildlife preserve on the river, and he's put up a fence and doesn't let any boats in or anything, and so there are hundreds and hundreds of birds, and it's in the courts now because they wanted to take the fence down and turn it into a state park, which is kind of too bad because they'll let boats into the river, and that'll be the end of the birds. Well, Candy gave me a running commentary on this going out about Ed Ball and the courts and how beautiful Wakulla Springs was, and so we got out. And first she had to take me around on a tour of the camellia bushes and show me that, yes, here was a camellia bush that was a red camellia and a white camellia crossed. And look, they were half red and half white. Candy is sort of like, she has little known facts of natural history that she springs forth with. If she doesn't know something, she makes it up. And it's always plausible. That the reason these camellias were half red and white was that they crossed a red and white camellia. So she said, we went because they had bought two tickets for the jungle ride about 2 months ago. They'd not used them. Candy said, oh, well, we have free tickets for the jungle ride. We can use them today. Then she said, well, maybe they'll give us trouble about this. She said, you stay back. I'm going to go talk to them. So I hung back. I didn't go up. She said, I'm just going to tell them that at the time, the man told us we could come back and use them any time we wanted to. It's really legal, she says to me. It's really legal. Don't worry about it. It's legal. So I said, you know, it's all right. I'm sure you paid for them at the time. So she goes up and tells me that yes, she just bought these last week. And, yes, and then they decided not to take the jungle ride. But the driver told her that she could come back and take the jungle ride anytime she wanted to take the jungle ride. And was it all right? And she sort of whips the tickets in front of him and snatches them back before he gets to look too closely. So he says, yeah, all right, go ahead, because there won't be many people there. So Candy goes, you know, one barrier passed. Well, the next barrier is we go out on the dock, and she checks with the drivers to the little man who drives it, the guide, to find out when the next boat is going, and he says, oh, it'll be about 10 or 15 minutes. So she comes back to me and she says, all right, Debbie, we have to get the two front seats on the boat. Otherwise, you won't see anything. We can't sit behind anybody. Now, what we have to do is be sure that we're the first people on the boat because they're small boats, and otherwise we won't get the front seats. I said, all right, Candy. So she says, now you wait back there because he might come there, and I'll wait here because he might come here. Now, if he comes to where you are, you save a place for me, and I'll save a place for you if he comes up here. That way we'll be the first people on the boat. So we stand on our little gangplank. I'm just perfectly obedient. You know, I do anything she says. So I stand there on my gangplank until the boat starts coming. And here it is. Here it comes. Here she comes. She says, hurry up, Debbie. We have to get the first front seat. So the boat comes to her gangplank, so I walk up and get behind her. And Candy, she just moves in a crowd. I don't know how she does it, but she moves in a crowd so that she's the first one. She just sort of, she's little, for one thing, and she just kind of gets around.
Oh, is she little?
She's small. She's real petite, and she kind of gets around people.
Oh, I didn't know
I mean,
that.
You know, I can't do it because I'm too big.
That,
yeah, I knew Candy was small.
She's really small. She's about 5'3", I guess, something like that. Very petite. And she just sort of zips around people and gets in front, you know, and if I just sort of stay behind her, then it doesn't really look like I'm pushing too, you know, but I just sort of get in behind her. Well, we were the first people there, you know, and they pulled up to the gangplank, and Candy was ready to get on before the people that were getting off got off, but she managed to wait that long, and then she quickly throws the tickets at the guide, you know, so it can't look at them too closely, and we jump on the boat and get the two front seats. She sits right there. There are three seats across the front of the boat. She sits right in the middle, like, you know, right in the center one. And she says, you take either side, Debbie, either side. It doesn't matter. We go up one side of the river and come down the other. Then she said, now, don't worry about those tickets, she said. Don't worry about them. I know that in the last 2 months we've spent $30 at Wakulla Springs. We're supporting this jungle ride. Don't you worry about it. I have no idea whether those tickets were legal or not. That was Candy. Candy's very good at doing things that are sort of almost legal. Like when we went to Greece, she found out that the 50 lepta piece in Greece was exactly like an American dime and that you could use it in an American telephone. Pay telephone. So Candy got all of us to go running down and get 500 lepta pieces so that we could make 500 free calls, or they aren't free, but a lepta is worth about, well, it takes 100 leptas to a drachma, so I don't know. Anyway, each one was worth about 2 cents instead of 10 cents. You see, so then the year after that, she calls me from Agnes Scott and says, "You know what I found out, Debbie? They've changed all the telephones. I hadn't tried to use my leptas. I still have a sack of leptas at home that I got. 550 lepta pieces. Oh, that's what it is. We got 500 of them, but 50 leptas is half a drachma, and a drachma is worth." Not very much. Yeah, much talking to. So, anyway, she said, they've changed all the telephones. They've modernized the telephones. I can only use my leptas in about 3 telephones in Atlanta.
Oh, you can use them in this country.
Oh, yeah, that's what she meant. Yeah, they're like an American dime, and you bring them back, I'd use them over here. Only Candy, right? So we're sitting on the boat, and Candy is so excited. When she gets excited, she sits on it. You know, she can't sit still. Fidgets all the time, so she's sitting there putting her feet up on the railing thing. She's so excited about this jungle ride. She's taken it about 60 times. Well, I thought it was a nice jungle ride. I really enjoyed it. I wanted Mr. Neelan there. It's a beautiful, beautiful ride, and there's so many birds. There must have been 200 ducks in the swimming area when we got on the boat. And then there are the anhingas, the water turkeys that swim and get wet and have to dry their wings. And we saw about 10 alligators on the banks and great huge turtles and the limpkins that are very rare. They have a beak that comes out like this because they eat snails. And the snails only grow in that river. And so Candy has all these little known facts right at her fingertips. She's taken this trip 100 times. She started talking to me. Now, Debbie, this is the only place in the United States, she says, that you can see limpkins, the only place. They're almost extinct. This is the only place you can see them.
She lays it off like that?
Oh, yeah. She puts it out like that. And she says, and the red-nosed gallinose, oh, they're my favorite. They have red beaks and yellow feet, and they're beautiful. And they're almost extinct, too, she says. Well, she's talking sort of loudly to me, you know, and the guide gets on in the back of the boat to run the boat, and he starts his little tour, and the only one he can hear is Candy. Well, the guide kept up for about 5 minutes, and then he just conceded the victory to her. He never said anything else. And Candy sat up in the front of the boat, and we'd go along, and she'd point over, and she'd look back at the guide, and she'd say, "Now, what's that bird over there?" She'd say, "Tell us what this one is," she said. "Stop the boat. I want to see this."
Oh, David.
The woman behind us was trying to take pictures, and Candy turns and says, "Oh, just tell the guide you want to stop. He'll stop. Just tell him you want to stop."
You mean she just pilots the boat?
She had the boat running down one side and back up the other. And she's talking so loudly. There was a family sitting all around us that had never been to Florida before, man and wife and their daughter, who's about 13, and sitting as far away from her parents as she possibly could get. And they kept asking her things like, "Did you see that bird, Jeannie?" "Yes, I saw it." She didn't want to admit she was with her parents. Well, they started talking to Candy. They were just fascinated by her little-known facts of natural history. Like, this is the only place in the world that you can find limpkins when the snail eggs are going to appear. "I wonder why there are no snail eggs," Candy says. "I know the snail eggs are on the cypress knees. I wonder why there are no snail eggs. It must not be the mating season for the snails." It was so funny. I could hardly look at the bird. This man sitting next to us, the other fortunate person that got the third seat on the front, says to Candy, "Why, you must be a native Floridian," he says. "You know all these things." "Oh," says Candy, "I've lived here 20 years, yes," she says, "but I've just taken this tour a lot." The man says, "Oh, I'm really glad you're here. I can't understand the guy." And I thought, well, no wonder you can't. He's not talking. The only one that's talking is Candy. So that was our jungle ride. Up and down the river listening to Candy.
You were going along with her on all that?
Oh, sure. I always do what she says, and just, you know, I stood on the gangplank waiting to see if the boat came to my gangplank or hers.
Well, and did you ask her questions, or you just looked when she pointed?
I asked her a couple questions, I think. But she'd point, mostly.
You didn't have to ask questions.
I didn't have to. She'd have pointed them all out.
She'd see them before you would.
Mm-hmm. Especially the birds, you know. We'd pass the bird, and she'd be pointing it. By the time we'd passed it, you know, and the poor guide was back there, not knowing which bird she was pointing at, because she was at the front of the boat, and he was at the back. So, it was hilarious.
Well, it's unusual that she didn't know the guy, isn't it?
It is. The time she's been there, and she also knows all the folk legends of Wakulla Springs. She told me the whole way out there about Big Joe, this alligator that used to live across from Wakulla Springs for 100 years. Nobody had ever heard him, and he'd never heard any of the swimmers. He used to come, and people would feed him, and somebody murdered Big Joe, and they took him and stuffed him and put him in Wakulla Springs, and she's practically in tears telling me the story of this alligator that was murdered, and we had to go. The first thing we did after we looked at the camellias was go in and look at Big Joe in his glass case. So now read that, Debbie. Just read it. Isn't that sad? She said, it was sad. I mean, they did kill the alligator, but as a folklore. Oh.
When was that? Saturday?
That was Sunday.
Sunday?
I went Saturday. I went down Saturday morning.
Well, you just had one full day?
Yes. I came back yesterday.
Yeah.
Today, Sunday. Well, I was there most of the day on Monday, too.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But she had to work Monday.
Oh, no. She calls up, Daddy, 5 o'clock this morning. Oh, I just got the worst stomachache. She carries on her. Then she hangs up the phone and proceeds to tell us how guilty she is for 30 minutes so that we'll be sure to know that she really has the right sentiments about calling in sick. She called in sick and we spent the day together. But
so you all had 2 full days. 2 full days.
Yeah.
How about that? And it was for, they were full?
Oh, yes. We cooked. Candy and I cooked together. That's one of our occupations when we get together. And she had found a recipe for a French recipe, a Julia Child's recipe on how to make chocolate cake. And it was a cake that didn't have any flour in it. And Candy didn't see how this cake could possibly succeed. And so she'd been saving it until I got there so that we could make it together. So we spent part of Saturday making this cake. The recipe was terribly long. The recipe was about 3 or 4 columns this long in the paper because Julia Child has to convince you that it's hard to make French food. And so she makes the recipes very hard to follow. And the Candy's kitchen is sort of small, and so we had the recipe. We never cut it out of the paper. We just had the paper spread out on the counter, and we were mixing on this and reading to each other back and forth. Well, in order to read Julia Child's recipes, you have to read the paragraph where she tells you what to do, and then you have to go back and read what the ingredients are. But the trouble is that she also puts in with the ingredients what utensils you're supposed to use, what kind of pot and what kind of pan, and what you're supposed to do to the pan. And I always get confused in all the pots and pans when I'm looking for how much chocolate to put in the cake. Well, it was a little difficult because I'd read the paragraph and then Candy would say, "What was that you said?" And so she'd read the paragraph and then I'd say, "Yes, but how much chocolate are we supposed to put in?" And so then she'd read all the ingredients and throw in the pots and pans too. And then we'd have to go back to it took us a while to make the cake, but we had a good time doing it.
And it did all right.
No. It's supposed to rise because it has beaten egg whites in it. It's made with whipped egg whites and cornstarch instead of flour. So we did everything that we were supposed to do, only Candy's oven doesn't work, and so she bakes in a 1945 GE portable oven that someone gave her. Which is fine, except that the top of it is aluminum, and so the heat loses, and We decided that was probably the reason that the cake fell. That, or the reason that Candy opened the oven, stuck something right in the middle of it, and then she came out in the other room, and she came in and said, "Daddy, that cake just fell." I said, "What'd you do to it?" She said, "Well, I was just testing the middle of it, and it just went
I mean, she doesn't cook?
She's an excellent cook. I don't know what possessed her. It's supposed to be a little bit underdone, but this cake just, we took them out and put them on the counter to cool, and they just shriveled up. And they got to be about this thick. They tasted fine, but they just looked, they were about a half an inch thick.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, I like a cake that falls. I realize it's not, you know, the proper kind of cake. Maybe I just like cake dough.
He really does. He likes for a sorry cake.
You'd love this cake.
Yeah. Well, nobody's going to let them fall just to have them.
Right?
But now the talk over there, Debbie, you had pretty good talk?
Well, I was interested in trying to get Doug to talk about music. He's a he's just finished his degree in music at Florida.
Yeah.
And he wanted to play all his favorite records for me. And so I wanted to get him to talk about music. He's interested in jazz, primarily.
Oh.
He's real funny. He loves Duke Ellington. And he says, if I ever have a son, I'm going to name him George Ellington after my father and Duke Ellington. He says, wait till my father finds out Duke Ellington is black. But I tried to get him to talk about jazz to me, and he can't do it. He doesn't talk very well about music, and except I know he has a lot of focus in what he does because he spends hours studying every day. He spent the whole time that we were at Wakulla Springs on the jungle ride, he studied. And Candy was talking to me about it, and she said that he's like that about everything he does. If he reads a book, then that's all he thinks about, and that's all he lives with for a week is that book. And he shuts himself up with his music for hours, but he can't, he doesn't talk very well about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, it's probably because he knows that I'm not a musician. And he knows he can't speak technically with me about music. But I just tried to get him to he sort of got high-handed about no one is ever interested in contemporary music. All they're interested in is classical composers. And so I just said, why should they be interested in jazz? What is it about jazz that's good, or something like that? And he defended himself. He thought I was attacking him, or attacking jazz, and he defended himself. And then when we listened to, and he defended himself in abstractions, just said, well, because it's beautiful and because it's free and it's expressive. And then he'd play a record for me, and he'd point things out. He'd say, now listen to that trumpet, or listen to that sax, or listen to this woman singing. But all he'd say would be, isn't that beautiful, or isn't that nice, or gee, he really got that high G, or, you know, he couldn't say anything else about it than that. And also, what's sort of interesting to me is that his favorite composer is Stravinsky, and I don't know much about music, but Stravinsky wrote I would call him 20th century rather than a jazz composer. Exactly. I don't know. Doug wrote his thesis on Stravinsky.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe that's the jazz side of Stravinsky.
I don't know. Actually, I think that was the title of his thesis, Jazz Elements in Stravinsky's, what did he examine, two works of Stravinsky.
But the books and things like that, he could handle those all right.
Well, we didn't talk about books too much, except that his example was when we talked about music, he carried it over to literature, and he said, you know, all anybody wants to do today is read Shakespeare. They just completely forget about John Steinbeck in the 20th century. And I said, well, Doug, I said, I'd much rather read Shakespeare than John Steinbeck any day. And again, well, I don't know, I guess I was defending myself then. I sort of probably sort of thought he was attacking me or something. I shouldn't have said that. I should have said, well, why should they read Steinbeck? Then I would have seen why he read Steinbeck. My mistake.
So, you didn't have too much talk?
Not the way we talk here, no. No. Some friends of theirs came over on, it's really sort of funny, they have just adopted a little baby, and so they came over on Sunday night for dinner. with the baby. They were going to bring their two dogs also, but fortunately they didn't. I think four dogs would have been too much. I might have left. They left the dogs and brought the baby. Well, here are the five of us. None of us know anything about babies. They've had the baby 4 weeks. The baby cries and won't stop crying, and so all of us are trying to offer reasons why this child is crying. None of us know, of course. All of us are offering reasons. Well, I think his mother changed his diapers about 6 times. She kept saying, "Oh, I guess I better change him." She said, "Change his diapers again." So that whole evening, we mostly talked about why the baby was crying.
Well, you know, there seem to be a lot of distractions. I find one little video distraction. Don't you remember the case I told you about Cookie? There's absolutely nothing he could do about it or needed to do about it. That big car, he knew the fan belt wasn't going to get him here. And he just sat here and kept looking out the window. Well, why he couldn't. You see, the whole is all gone.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing left for him. And look what a small thing it was. Franklin was there. And Helen was there, his mother, and nothing could hinder him. And Cookie would have to go anyhow and dig him a fan belt. Once the thing busted, they couldn't drive it on in, you know.
But he couldn't talk.
No, he couldn't.
No,
just a very small matter.
Uh-huh.
It takes so little, you see, your faculties have got to be detached, pretty much, you see, and it takes so little to snap them back in gear, so little. Now, Franklin, Frankie, the Chitties came Sunday. Oh, we really had a visit the first time in a year or so. I haven't been out there. We left them over in the ball. So hard to get them to move, you see. We worked at it so long and so hard. I told Faye, let's just fix it this way. Just any time that Frankie wants to bring his mama over here to spend a little time and visit and have supper, dinner with us. Just let him do that and we'll take her back. Getting over there and finding them when they're free, you see, it's just a half-time job. He never got her over here. We left them holding the ball. You just couldn't keep it up. It was too
Friday,
it could pull you
Friday
down.
After Friday after Friday, I would go over and get Miss Jitty and bring her back and we'd have dinner and then you'd take her back. And it's 15 miles. 10.
Yes, but it's getting the organizing and getting it ready, you see, and all like that. Well, you don't know what it is, so you do it. So we passed the buck to Frankie, and he never got her here one time. And we haven't seen him since. They've come by a time or two, called a time or two, but what's that? I could call.
And they wanted her to come. You know,
they
wanted
her to come. Yes. She enjoys coming.
She enjoys very
But here's the thing. Sometimes I just get a great urge to listen to Frankie talk. He is about as flat-headed as they come, and nothing he says is right. But it's fine talk. and it don't matter what he's talking about. He talking about them house dogs, and he make you set way back. It, all you do is just make me nervous. Talking about them dogs. It don't interest me in the slightest. It don't matter what dogs he talks about. This generation, a former generation, or hound dogs, or puppy dogs, it's interesting. And he can pick up any dog he thinks of and just go with it. Just fabulous. It just makes you wish you was a dog, or something like that. And I miss it. I miss it. I love the whole talk, all this talk. You say, why do I keep at it? Well, what else am I going to do? I don't want to take a boat ride on Wakulla Springs. I don't. There's so many things I don't care to do. But I do love to do this. I just dearly love to do it, you see. It ain't work for me. Now, what it is, I don't know, you see. Nothing you said interests me. Not one thing. The whole shebang. The whole shebang. You see, I can just dismiss it from my whole universe. Not a thing about it.
Don't tell him. Next time. Look at him.
What shall I throw?
Well, now you see the difference, is what I'm saying. I mean, you see what it is. You won't say it. You won't go into it. That's what I put before you a while ago. I didn't ask you to give a whole narrative of all these dogs and birds. You see, everybody's seen them. I want to say how the world looks after he and Miss Mary. Well, now that's your proposition. At least that's the way I state it. You see, she comes back and here I'm beating her.
Right off. With a charm, she comes back with something to say.
Yeah.
I got it. Oh, Douglas is substitute teaching now. Till he gets a teaching job. He substituted on Monday in an elementary school for eighth graders, and he came out. We went to pick him up, and he came out with just his eyes crossed. But he's been substituting in Gadsden County, which is, I don't know anything at all about Gadsden County, but according to Candy, it's one of the most underprivileged counties in the state. It's the high school that he's substituting in is primarily black, and it's so violent that they have bouncers in the hall. They hire these big men to walk the halls and throw kids back in class. Doug said the kids are just—they're really violent. He said I went into class one day and the teacher had left a lesson plan for me to give a test. And she said, if any of the kids are cheating, they're obviously looking on somebody else's paper, I want you to take down their name, isolate them, take down their name, and tell me. So he said, so I gave out the test, and about 5 minutes later, this big kid on the front row is looking like this on the next person's paper. So he said to him, look, I'm going to have to ask you to stop that, because otherwise I'm going to take your name down and give it to the teacher. I don't want to have to do that. Please stop cheating. So the kid said, you know, no, not going to, and looks back over. So Doug says, well, I think you're going to have to move to the back of the room now. And the kid finally gets up and meanders back to the back corner of the room with his paper, and then won't sit there, gets up and starts walking around the class saying, hey, yeah, tell me the answer number three, he says. So Doug is really furious by this time. He just doesn't know what to do. So he walks over and he's going to take the boy's paper from him, and the kid reaches out and grabs him like this on his arm, you know, and Doug just looks at him and he looks him right in the eye and says, you take your hands off of me or I'm going to deck you. said the kid just sort of dropped his hand. No. But just the idea of hiring those men to walk, patrol the halls and throw kids back in class. Unbelievable.
Well,
just unbelievable.
I had one on Marty Saturday on the Seminole truck.
Well, you stopping there?
I tell you, that's it's so sordid. That happens over and over again. There's nothing to it.
Well, I also went to see Cole Porter again. Went to see Kiss Me Kate. This one is just, this is the summit. He's making fun of the theater. And that just gives him a free hand. He makes fun of everything, but he's making fun of the theater. He's making fun
all
of
good nature.
Yeah, and he's making fun of what he does. And so he knows what he's doing. He's got two plays going at once. He's got the Shakespeare play, Taming of the Shrew, and then his play, which is the play around the play. And the characters carry over from one play into the other. And so you think, aha, you're really seeing what's going on because you know that those characters in the Shakespeare play are really just Lily so-and-so and so-and-so else in the other play. You know who they are, really, but he's got you tricked because that's a play, too. And it's a marvelous fun of the theater, that Brush Up Your Shakespeare is such a funny song. He says, brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now, brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow. These two little gangsters bow down. The gangsters have gotten roped into being in the play because of a gambling debt for the director. And so they're keeping one of the actors on stage at gunpoint until they find out that the mafia has changed hands and they don't have to collect the money after all. So they're trying to leave and they can't get out of the theater. They don't know how to get off stage. And there they are facing the audience, the audience, and they say, look at that, look at that. And then they start doing this little soft shoe thing and singing this, brush up your Shakespeare, start quoting him now, brush up your Shakespeare and the ladies you will wow. And then they quote, if you quote her a line from Othello, she'll think you're a hell of a fellow. They quote 13 play titles and one sonnet line in this silly, silly song. He's got everybody makes just fun of everybody makes fun of gangsters, makes fun of politicians. He's got a wonderful politician who's trying to marry out the leading lady, makes fun of women who don't like men and men who don't like women. Very good. Trickiest things I've come to well Philly and Padua, and then Catherine comes in and says, I hate men.
Right here at the table.
didn't do anything mental. Goddammit, you sat there like an out on a log.
Well,
you don't pick up a thing. She got a silent audience here. All Faye does is just cackle over there. I try to say something, and all I do is put my foot in my mouth.
You
but nobody else says anything.
Yes, well, yeah, too.
You can't, one person can't talk by himself, Faye.
I know it.
You can't rise above your audience, and she hadn't got any audience.
I thought she had a pretty good one.
Oh, we had a good audience for Kiss Me, Kate. Everybody was clapping before the songs were over, and it got about halfway through the first act. Everyone was enjoying the song so much that they'd clap before they were over, and so we'd finally get to one song, and the singer would finish and sort of wait, and the audience would sort of wait, you know, is it over? Can we clap now? And then, oh, they clap. Make sure they're with the room.
Well, you sat right between your father and your mother.
Yeah. We didn't really get to talk too much about Cole Porter because we had our little cousin went with us, so we didn't talk too much about Cole Porter.
But he sings all the way home.
Yeah. We sang all the way home from this one, too. And David was there. At this one, we saw David in the intermission, and David was eating mints. My mother likes to eat mints in the theater, so she said that David was talking to this whole group of us, some people from my sister's office and my family, and he starts to break off a piece of mint. And my mother looks at him and says, "Gee, David, I certainly would like some of that mint. I forgot my mints tonight." So David looks at her, and he looks at all the people that are standing around, and he says, "Look, I'll give you some mint, but I'm not giving it to everybody else standing here." He said, "I've got to have something to get me through this play. It used to be four beers, but I figured Equity would get upset if I drank them in the performance." So he breaks off the candy. There's about this much left, and he breaks off a piece and gives it to Mother and says, "Good luck. It's last year's Christmas candy."
And your mother eats mint.
Well, they don't sit through the performance silent, though, do they? Didn't they sing through the last one?
They just laughed through the last one. They laughed through this one, too. Well, my father in this one started talking. The minute we sat down, he started talking to the two people sitting in front of him. I don't know if he knew them or not, but he's talking out loud. Telling them something about, the synopsis of the play said that Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew was a play within a play. So Patty, our cousin, said, "What is that? I didn't know that it was a play within a play." And I said, "Well, I didn't either. Let's ask Daddy." So we passed it down the line to Daddy. He's sitting at the end. "Daddy, what is this, a play within a play?" So he passes back, only speaking at the top of his voice, the reason that it's a play within a play. This little lecture floats down sentence by sentence to us sitting on the end.
And he's standing?
No, he's sitting there. Sitting. Not exactly a church voice. Talk about an outdoor voice at the theater.
I thought he would all sit very quietly, or maybe hum with the tunes.
Mm. We clapped and laughed.
Friends is a song that's in the other one, isn't it?
Friendship is in
Friendship.
Anything Goes.
That was his favorite of that one.
That's his favorite. Mm-hmm. And this one, I think it was Brush Up Your Shakespeare. We told David at the intermission that we wanted an encore of Brush Up Your Shakespeare. And he said, oh, well, he'd give it to us, but he didn't. I think they sing it at the end of the finale. They sing a couple bars of Brush Up Your Shakespeare, and I think he thought that was enough. It's just part of the finale.
You don't go with a critical notion in your mind as to whether any of them, you just go to enjoy it. I'm not thinking about the play, I'm thinking about the actors.
The actors.
Well, you still got to look at it.
Uh-huh.
And you can't look at it without some statement in your mind.
Uh-huh.
At least you shouldn't.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean, not critical?
Well,
you just sit there like a sitting duck. Wait for something to hit you. Your mind, and maybe you don't know it. Of course, they knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're just formulating some statement to take hold of it. Your mind just works like a shuttle all the time. If you let it, take over. I don't know. I got my books at the office. That's one reason I wanted to go in today. I wanted to get them. I haven't been in. No one else could find them. And I can't draw from somebody else's books.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean in the cold port. I meant some of the neoclassical things. And that'd give me a little leverage.
You didn't get to read this one beforehand. Well, you've got your parents that'll fill you all in on it.
Oh, you've seen it before.
I had seen it before, I think, when I was young. I remembered when I was a little child. Because I remembered a couple of the songs, and I sort of vaguely remembered that it's about a production of Taming of the Shrew.
But I don't see how are we going to get any help from somebody on this grant thing, from somebody who's got no notion about what it is. I declare I don't, and I don't know how you can't convey it in too easy lessons. Competing with the dogs and the children, you see, and the
we
bus and.
We, Candy and I, read through the some of the grant proposal together, and her suggestion was that Council on Humanities, that someone had given her the little book, and I'd forgotten that that was the name of it. I thought this was a different organization, but that was her suggestion.
I don't need a suggestion. I need the first page. I need to put it into the language of the grant, you see.
She said that with foundations, what you have to do is write them a letter. Yeah. Well, that would be the first page of the grant.
Yeah.
And then they'll be very specific about how you're going to spend the money or budget and stuff.
That's more than I am about where I spend mine. I never distinguish between fertilizer and feed. Just lump it all together. Expenses.
I just draw a line down the middle somewhere along there and separate them for the internal revenue. So you're not gatekeeping us on track at all tonight. You just give up. Now this, you see, this is we ought to get on something else. Rick,
I
tell you.
A little.
Huh?
I got a little something.
Oh, sure.
Like
golly.
This is a little article I found on Foxfire.
Oh, yeah.
From Saturday Review of was the education part of Saturday Review. Now, it's written by a guy named David Shapiro. Right? He is a teacher. And apparently, he's quite a ways up in teaching. He taught at Bedford Stuyvesant. And in the article, he implies that he was a specialist on councils of arts in school systems. And he kind of has a distaste for specialists because he says they seem to give way to very loose forms for the children to work with in the arts. And it all becomes, as he calls it, surrealistic. Anyway, the gist of the article is Foxfire as an educational tool. He doesn't really look at Foxfire itself, but he looks at the effect it'll have on the educational system. And he described it as a fine example of Emersonian self-reliance and compassionate anthropology. And it should please, he says, James Agee and Oscar Lewis. And then he made a statement.
Oscar Lewis, the one we got.
Those Mexicans. He makes a statement, which I took to be his interpretation of the purpose of Foxfire, and I have it here. He said, Foxfire, like the recent quilt exhibit at the Whitney Museum in New York, is part of a general effort to reevaluate, revitalize, and remember the older community, to record the extraordinary hunting stories with attention to pattern and accent, and to reaffirm a sense of present worth through links with the past. Well, not a lot in that.
Well, I like those statements in that article.
Uh-huh.
That
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, he went on to make a point, and he was talking about the way a lot of people have condemned what he calls popular arts. And he said things like moonshining or quilt making, and then he says the children's art forms. And he says these shouldn't be held up to scorn because they're a good pedagogical device. And the kind of feeling I got from it was he was thinking in the same lines as we are in minor art forms.
But defensive.
Yeah. I keep getting this feeling he got burned somewhere along the lines of specialists in art councils.
Yeah.
And where they were always trying to force students to work with major forms, you see.
Oh.
And then he kind of, he goes off and he calls Foxfire, he says it's within the tradition of American poetry, and this keeps cropping up. The poetry of American Foxfire is in the tradition of American poetry, and he says the major metaphor of Foxfire is the stentless labor of men and women who built America. So when he gets off into calling it poetry, you get lost. And he also referred to a work called The Stoop, which apparently is kind of an urban version of Foxfire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he did favor what he called field work, and he looks at Foxfire's anthropological field work, and he highly recommended it. And this, I thought, was a fairly good statement. He said, the inaccuracy of thought among our children come from our inability to permit them to bump against stubborn and irreducible facts of the community. In other words, you're making them work with abstract forms and art and the major art forms and things that they're not ready to handle, and they just simply lose contact with facts and information. So there's a fairly solid case to be built from this kind of review.
Where did you get out of that?
This is in Saturday. It was in Saturday Review. Now there's several other articles. Yeah. Well, it's called Recovering a Sense of Past and Place. It was listed in that Ford Foundation letter. So I just looked it up when I was in the library.
In what?
The little letter from the Ford Foundation.
At LL Center.
It had a bibliography of articles written on Foxfire.
Oh.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Now, there's several others, but this is the only magazine I could find. The others were scattered.
Well, you see, he's using all those abstractions.
Yeah.
And it's just like religion. You use the Lord in positions where you don't need him.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need anything. You don't need all those abstractions just to see how they.
Yeah. It's kind of unfortunate when they write for these articles, these magazines,
yeah.
You see,
it
they've got to show,
into it.
Got to show their
into
prose
it.
And how much they know.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff he says, you see, he compares, it kind of tickled me. He went off and compared in the stoop, he compared some of the expression was in warm tones of outrage, as were the French wall signs of 1968. Now, who knows what the French wall signs were in 1968? So, you have to be kind of esoteric to get into some of this article. I feel like that's the way a lot of them fall short, is to get wound up in writing magazine articles. But he went through, and see, instead of saying what Foxfire was in his words, what he saw in it, he just went through and listed some of the information in Foxfire. And this little thing on NRE and Lon's chair and the moonshine making, see? And that covered Foxfire. So he never really looked at Foxfire and told you what it was. You more or less had to make up your own mind.
Oh, didn't
you see? But he did make the point that it was a teaching device as the students need to get out. So there's a little move underfoot, it looks like, and he mentions another article in a in an education magazine. He said, "It's a pity we don't have more examples of field work in the schools, but see the marvelous article in Teachers and Writers Collaborative Newsletter." So there must be something coming up in there.
May well see that.
Yeah.
Well, now we've got this little notice that Dick Green called Faye's attention to. She was by the office yesterday. And tomorrow, Gene Morse and them are having a number of people get together who are sort of interested in these things, including the boy I've got in there. I meant to bring it in here. The one we sent $15.
Yes, Sam Gallen.
He's on it, I think. And to just get together and see what they can see if they can work out something together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a good idea. And I told Faye that the beauty of it is, you see, that I don't have to go. Because I'd kill it all if that thing that came up to me. I'd kill it off, it'd kill me off. But they'd love to hear what you said.
I imagine they will.
Well, now you see, on this, I haven't gone to that extent. I stay away from the abstraction. It's pretty plain language. Of course, all these small words are also technical.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing they don't realize. I remember old Dean Hunter said, Maryville College, I used to go to the meetings with him. He said, Jonathan Edwards, all he used was a small word, he said. But he says, just amazing what he meant by it. Jonathan Edwards. And got no theological language to speak of. Very, very little. And you don't need it. You see, you've got technical language here, but it doesn't sound technical. It's all the same.
Mm-hmm. That's understandable.
I ought to say, I ought to make this clear somewhere along the line that I use the word experience. It has a double use. You see, experience is the meaning that you get out of your experience. That's your experience. This is what all my experience means to me. What my experience means to me is my experience. You see, it's a meaning abstracted out of a whole lot of experience, isn't it? It is. Well, but that's not the way I use it. You see, I use it as experiences that lead into some sort of experience. I'm just putting the two together.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I'm using the experiences, the little narrative happenings. That's the way in which I mean it. But the others there too. But I try to stay away from it. But I think you see the people who make a business of writing, you see, they would have to use it in that abstract sense. Mine is less abstract.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think Debbie ought to give us a little view of the world from the point of view of which we work out here, so to enable us to make contact, use our... See, she hadn't used any of our categories when I say mental.
Well, I tried to use the reporting on the dog. That to me was... Well, that was the time when I saw them looking at something visible in their lives and reporting on it.
I didn't see any direction in it. It looks to me like there's a lot of noise. Just a distraction in the house.
No, they turn it. It's important enough to them. It's not just a distraction. It's important to them.
The dogs are like people. It's not. They aren't distracted by the dogs. They
They live around them.
Yeah, they do.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't mean they're rattled. Although I think they are, from the way you quoted. Well, what would you say? The use of my cows, just I see them as people. Well, they perplex me. There's no secret to that. They just keep me off balance 3/4 of the time. What in the world are you going to say about that? If they don't keep you off balance. Because you don't deal with them. Hell, I see them getting bony out there, and all I got's this darned old fool oats over here. And I get me a stick and make them eat it, and you think it's funny. To me, it's sad. It pulls me all the time. I feel about it, you see. I wake up at night thinking, what in the world are they going to eat? The whole ranch is on my shoulders. It's not funny. And it keeps I 3/4 of the time I wish somebody else had it. Seriously. I'd love to have a little relief from it. We talk about humans. I'm a too shocked.
I thought she did. I went along with Debbie. Yeah, I went along with Debbie. And the nice thing about it was that she did use their looking at the dogs. And also she gave us another picture.
I don't think they look at the dogs.
She gave us another picture of Candy.
I don't think they look at the dogs. They don't have the dogs to look at them.
I don't know why they have the dog.
Well, I know why I've got the cows.
They got the dogs because they wanted a pet.
Well, that's just saying I eat a biscuit because I wanted a biscuit.
The nicest thing I think she did was that look at Candy. It was Debbie looking at Candy. And that ride.
That what?
It was that Debbie looking at Candy on that ride.
Well, she hadn't said anything about that plausible at all. She's talking about Candy out there acting like an adolescent. Hell, anybody can go around passing off old tickets and trying to get the front seats. You don't have to be Candy to do that. You don't have to be on the governor's staff to do that.
Oh. Well, I think.
See, I've set it up for her. She won't take over.
It helps if you're on the. I know.
That's why.
Candy's writing a report on consumer fraud. And then and she's out there frauding them. I really don't. I think the tickets were legitimate. I really do. But she said her best story about consumer fraud, she said, you know, it's making Doug aware. She said, it's finally making Doug aware of how he's taken all the time. He'll take things back to the store now. She said, the other day, this was last year sometime, she said, the phone rang. Doug answered it. She says, Doug is such a pushover. He is such a pushover. He'll anything anybody asks him, he'll do it, she said. And
this is the first time I'm able to take hold. The first time. Oh, almighty, look how I've had to wait, buddy. That damned adolescent ride. And those fool dogs. I've been harassed by dogs. Everybody who comes out here wants dogs. They bring dogs.
Don't get her off the subject, guys.
They bring dogs out here to give them air. Well, why don't they take them somewhere else to air them? They don't think the dogs ought to be kept up. So they bring them out here.
To run your cows.
I don't care whether they run the cow or not. I just don't want them out here. They're distracting. Here I am trying to keep a place where a fella can. Knock somebody's head off if he wants to, and they bring dogs. Go ahead, Debbie.
I'm trying to pull this together because it was.
Don't pull it. Just go ahead.
Candy's telling about Doug and consumer fraud. She says, the phone rings, Doug answers it. Doug is such a pushover. Anything anybody asks him, he tells them anything. She said, I'm sitting at the kitchen table and Doug's talking on the phone. And I just hear Doug, meanwhile, is sitting on the other end of the table saying, oh, Candy. She says, I'm sitting there and I hear Doug saying, yes, yes. Yes, my name is Douglas Richards. Yes, yes, I'm a graduate student at... Yes, why, I am a graduate student at Florida State University. Why, in music, yes. How did you... Yes, yes, of course I am. Well, yes, I live at... And gives his address. And yes, my wife works for the government. Yes, she does. Yes, uh-huh, yes. And my father? Oh, well, my parents are from... Candy, meanwhile, is tearing her hair out, just pulling her hair out, saying, who is this? Who are you talking to? What is this? Who are you talking to? And finally, she said, after about 10 minutes, Doug has told him his entire life story, told him everything about him. He says, well,
Yes, no, I'm sorry. I already have life insurance. Candy starts screaming at him, hang up, Doug, hang up, quick, hang up. They're just trying to sell you phony life insurance. So Doug says, well, yes, of course I'll think about it. Oh, of course I'll think about it. By this time he's on first name basis with the person on the other.
But he goes along with them best he can.
Oh, he does. Tells them everything, every question they ask him.
Yeah.
And so he can't tell them no. He doesn't want any life insurance. He won't do it. So he says, well, I think I better talk this over with my wife, he says. I'll tell you what. You call me back tomorrow, would you please, at noon, and hangs up. And Candy just explodes. What do you mean talk it over with your wife? We've already got life insurance, she says. What are you talking about? They're taking you. Why didn't you tell him no? Oh, says Doug, I'll tell him no tomorrow. So the whole night long, Doug is worrying about how he's going to tell this man no, he's not going to buy his life insurance. And I think he finally solved the problem by leaving at noon. So he wouldn't have to talk to him. And Doug, and so now, Candy said, Doug has progressed another step. He will now take things back to the store if they're not any good. Such as I say, well, I think they were talking mostly about groceries. If they find groceries, so the pack is half full or something, they take it back. Because Candy's on the governor's staff of consumer fraud, and so they take it back. And Doug just says yes. He says I take it back now.
But he's still half-hearted about it.
She eggs him on.
Yes.
He takes it. Well, I think it's probably twice as much effort to take back a soggy head of lettuce as it is to put it in your salad and eat it, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I'd look at it, but
yeah.
Candy take it back.
Well, buying it, yeah.
But okay. Candy would take it back.
She'd take it back. Oh, yeah, she'd take it back. She certainly would.
Jesus, I'd love to hear more about that. But you didn't have much to say about that. That's shop talk.
She didn't talk about it too much, no.
I told you, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. She talked a little bit about the report that they were writing. She wrote part of it. And I told her I sure would like to see it when she gets through. But she'd try to steal a copy. Consumer fraud. Said she'd get a few copies extra.
Yeah. Well, I would tell you, Debbie, you see, I've gone through those battles before. You see, all of the arts are very difficult to talk about. Painting, it's next to impossible. All they do is give you schools of art, styles of art,
That's not true. I can talk about art with my godmother.
Well, that's unusual, but by and large, that's what it consists of. It's just putting little blocks together. And music is just, if anything, it's harder than the others, you see. They'll get on, like Faye, she gets on a sonata form, and she'll have you eat and sleep in that sonata form. Well, maybe that's the way to do it, but it's very difficult to put the arts into words.
Yes, and I think it's probably hardest with music.
Sure.
Because you have to be so trained in the language before you can understand it if you're not a trained musician. You know, for example, if you don't read music.
Yes. Well, I find that rather dangerous ground, and I try to skirt it. And nobody wants to get hung up on that. But now you consumer stuff. That goes a long way. Your color springs, all those springs, I suppose, are losing out. I suppose. They used to have such beautiful ones, you know, and that's where people would go.
Well, color is still beautiful, but I guess it won't stay that way too long if it becomes a state park.
Yeah.
And this ball.
Oh, Lord, that's the end of everything. You see, that's the end of Cross Creek, that state park over there.
See, this is where Bobby Harper took us when we were up that last year. And she had a lot to say about Ball, who was trying to keep it, you know. Mm-hmm. He was a big, you know, he made a lot of money, but still he was trying to keep it to where the boats would stay out.
Yeah, and...
And they were hoping that he could.
Well, it doesn't look like he's going to win in the court, so...
Oh, no, you can't. Another environmental, major environmental effort to do it, wouldn't it?
And you get the defenders busy.
What do they say about Cornwell?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard for them to adopt him. Just because he's sort of runs with the ball too much?
I just don't know, God.
Nice impression I got. It tired me to talk to him. I wanted to.
He's an ecologist.
Sure. Maybe it's so difficult. Hard on a person.
That could be.
You've got to be pretty steady to start with. Take the blows.
Maybe. Pretty quick on your feet, quick changing too.
Yeah.
My mother talks about Margie Carr changing plans every day.
Yeah.
She says that she's a very highly imaginative person.
Oh, really?
Because every problem that comes in, that they get called and ask the most incredible questions. Their worst problem is people write to them, children mostly, write to them and say, please tell me what is ecology. I would like pictures too. Love, Susie, in this big handwriting, you know. And my mother just grieves over these children. She wants to have them be interested in ecology, but she doesn't know how to answer, what is ecology? Please send me some pictures. Love, Susie. She doesn't know what to do. But that's a simplified case of the questions. But Margie Carr gets the questions from the legislators. What is ecology? Send us pictures.
Yeah.
Only they say it in three paragraphs and 10-letter words.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing.
Yeah. I could help her on that. I probably handle it written language, but she can.
Margie. Well, none of the people that they have writing down there can write.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
for
not
sure.
I'm talking about the ability to write. I'm talking about framing it.
Well, I'm just saying something clearly. It's something
to
they
say
should.
Something clearly to the legislature.
Well,
I don't know what that means. You've seen more of
it. I only met Mrs. Carr a couple of times.
So you don't know a thing that goes on around there?
Well, I see it. I went down and worked for my mother one morning, typed some things, and helped her rewrite a report of David Anthony's about the studies done on the Rodman Reservoir. Their efforts are primarily with the barge canal.
Yeah.
And just keeping up, my mother just keeps up with the press on the barge canal.
Yeah.
Answers mail, things like that.
Yeah.
She tries to keep the organization running, so she says she's not creative, which I don't know whether that's true or not. But I think she's.
Greg, I'll just give Debbie that little piece of yours on Mr. Neal, and she just read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there. Do I have it? Still have it on it.
Yeah.
He found out that riding on Mr. Nealon's trees over there, that he has to leave out the politics, leave Mr. Nealon's ignorant, and that you don't have a degree. He has to leave it all out. Just one little bit will contaminate the whole trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think Mr. Nealon realizes that. And I don't think it's probably not that he's hard of hearing, you have to speak so loud to him. I think it's that talk. Now, how much he does of that to other people, I don't know. But I'm sure he does it to them, too. He don't just reserve that for me, does he?
One thing I've found about being young and being associated with the age of college students is everyone comes along and tells you to go to college and get an education and all. And you're defenseless. If you're around, they won't say it. But if I go to Mr. Neal by myself, you know, it comes in a barrage.
How's that?
Is, well, have you gotten your degree? You're going to get your degree, you know. It's a rough world. You've got to make a living. You've got to have a thing to do. And you have to take it every time. There's not too much you can say.
Oh.
But it'll pass.
Well, now you see me meet those things.
But they won't tell you to go to college.
Yes, but they'll tell me to go to hell and do a lot of things. And do it all the time, kick me on the shin. Probably worse than they ever would you.
Mm-hmm.
And I get them told first.
Mm-hmm.
If I think they're going to do it. If I think they won't know what Debbie's doing out here, I said they send them people out here, expect me to do something. And all, what do? Ride horses! You see, I can track them.
Yeah.
That's what they said to me. Well, so you see, the whole thing is up there until next time. Well, I can get ahead of the next time too. At least I won't get out on a well, they won't corner me.
But I can see how it's more difficult for them.
You're right, if you get a hold of the subject before they do, you can turn it around.
I don't know if she's pretty firm, ever mind that.
That can be.
Yes, she can.
You know who's one step ahead and not getting caught like a sitting duck? Only I think she got caught. Candy is, remember we were talking about how it had this grandparental push? That you were talking about Suzanne's parents? Well, Candy and Douglas are getting this really badly from both sides of the family, that why they've been married 2 years and why don't they have a baby yet. And so Candy, the last time she went home, she decided she'd get her mother good. And so she said, well, her mother is going on and on about, well, why don't you have a baby, Candy? When are you going to have a baby? And Candy said, well, tell you, Mother, we just can't afford to have a baby right now, but I'll tell you, if you're willing to support us for a year, we'll go on and have a baby right now. And her mother said, well, you know, I could probably manage that, Candy. I could probably send you a check every month. Don't tell that to anybody. Miss Mary Incarnate over here. That's classified.
Let me tell you.
You're not supposed to pass that one on.
Let me tell you, Sunday. I just got at 10:30, just at the magical time. I said to Faye, I got to lose what I was doing. I wasn't doing much. I was trying to get straight. I worked a day or more. Saturday was one of the worst days I ever had. I was so tired I eat. And then everything come along would snag me, or I'd snag it, you see. It's a wonder I got through the day. Well, anyhow, I tried it on Saturday, but then I did it on Sunday. I tried to work out this what I call the Virgil Affair, beginning on Thursday when you went over there until the end of it. Well, Sunday, we got a little more light on it. I must have got ahead of something. Anyhow, I said to Faye, it is just time. It is just time. We go over there and talk about those collars, and maybe we can get in the kitchen and make some biscuits. And we did. We did both. And furthermore, we had a visitor out there at the collar place. They were out there when we got there. So we came on in, and I said, She spoke pretty straight. Wasn't that today she spoke pretty straight about Gregor?
Yeah.
No, it was the day before.
Yeah?
It's another day. Yes. But this day, I just brought it up. I said, why, Ms. Mary, Debbie tells me that Virgil said, Ms. Dodge, you know, said he was just so expert in all these things, and he told her that he had learned this billiards pool, he's an expert at that, that he had learned that from a professional. Oh, she says, I know that professional. She said he learned that like all these other tramps around here, just down here at this little entertainment center. They had a grocery store there that Thomas's did and tried to make that go for several years and it wouldn't go, so they turned it into an entertainment center and had pinballs and billiards and all like that. And he says, oh man, Thomas is a professional that taught him to play pool. I said, once you get a thing started, it'll just go on and on, won't it?
Just keep going.
I think I said, well, maybe he learned from a professional when he was in the Army. Marvin said, oh, no, he didn't. He never had a pool cue stick in his hand in the Army. It wasn't where it was in it.
He was in Korea, you see. He didn't have any in Korea. They might have had it. Well, I think the musical comedy is hard to talk about. You can't get your teeth in it. Maybe I'm just academic. And as for listening to it, I don't know. It's a little hard for me to listen to it now. I'd much rather hear the countryside. I don't know. That one little thing that Ms. Dodd, Shirley, she leaned over and she says, now, I want to tell you this. Something be what it may. The reporting is there. And as she talks, you see all sorts of relationships. All sorts. And that is a state in your mind, you see, and then you hear little additions to it. It enables you to see in them. Now that's what happened to me Saturday. I was so tired. And I'd been out here all day, and I'd waited for that damn Seminole truck, and then when I came, they had a couple of bulldozer drivers on it. And they had just barely left, and Dodd came. Pick up that little calf I was going to sell him for $100. Calf is out there. And that was too much for me. I was just bringing up the cows. I had such an onerous, I was so onerous. Faye had been down there with me, and I just couldn't get along with her or the cows. And I just put them back in the field. I said, let's go on back to the house. I came back up here and lay down and rested a few minutes, and she went off, and I was glad she did. And I went down there, and I picked out me a few cows and started up here. I was here all by myself. I go out there and just sit down under the tree with them cows. And here come the Dodge rattling up in that pickup truck with Mr. Dodge driving, and there that grown son of his, who's not 16 yet, and been married but 17 years, you know. I don't give a damn if I've been married but 10. And there's Miss Dodd. Now, I was dealing with Miss Dodd. She's the only one over there I want to deal with. And I like to deal with her. I rode with Mr. Dodd, and when he took these other animals home. And I could just see that one little baby calf in there, all by himself, in the back end of that, and all them three adults sitting up there, scrooging away in the front, in the cab of that car, and they go, that little calf would swish over on this side, then he'd swish over on this side, and then he'd swish up against the cab, and I wouldn't even speak to the bastard. I said, I've been waiting for you all day. I've got these cows now. It'll be an hour or two before I get through. And I went on with them cows. I just couldn't face it. Of putting that nice little calf in that darn old pickup truck and letting him swish back and forth all the way to Cross Creek. Oh, I mean that.